Welcome to the Body Meets Mind podcast, philosophies and strategies for an elevated life. I'm Tom.
And I'm Paulie. We interview world authorities and experts in health and wellness optimization, psychology and spirituality.
And we don't mind chewing the fat either, just the two of us.
If you feel like being part of a casual yarn about self-awareness and growth, pull up a chair because the coffee's still hot.
We'll see you on the inside. Yeah, well, so today, guys, we're going to come at you with another topic. For those just tuning in now, we've been trying to hit topics, new topics once a week. They're shows that run for about 25, 30 minutes. So we don't want to bombard you with information, but we just feel that hitting a topic a week, depending on what you're moving through, what you're into, you know, certain pain points, it's just going to give you the deep dive. You know, coinciding with as much as Paul and I know about these things and having experience in coaching and counseling and CrossFit and personal training and all the other weird ways that we have used this time on earth. But today is all about sleep. And this is a, you know what, Paul, I was actually about to say this is an overlooked topic, but would you agree that it's actually now starting to get a little bit of momentum? People are starting to move away from that kind of hustle culture grind and tune into what their body's needs are.
Interesting that you say that, because I actually believe that in our circles, perhaps it is something that is definitely being drawn to the surface, and people are understanding and appreciating it as the science comes to the surface. But I would say in the general populace, it's still very much an I'll sleep when I'm dead type of philosophy. Yeah. Being busy, waking up early, going to sleep late, burning the candle at both ends. There's not a great appreciation for what the benefits are associated with sleep, both mentally, physically, and emotionally. Like, the science is pretty much very resolute in that.
Yes, yes. Well, I mean, I just remember, I remember reading in one of Johan Hari's books how there are a couple of different depression scales that you kind of measure the severity of depression. If, you know, you move closer towards suicidal ideation. There's like the DAS, there's the K10. I can't remember exactly which scale it is, but I certainly know that as a difference between antidepressants, and there's obviously place for antidepressants, but as a difference, a general measure of the effectiveness of antidepressants on depression in comparison to a good night's sleep, the antidepressants are worth about 1.5 on that scale. So if you're a 52, you know, getting down is good, because we want you strongly not considering suicide. And doing whatever we can. But a good night's sleep is worth about 6 points, you know? So, I mean, there's a lot. Intuitively, we know that, you know?
No, many people don't know that. And many people don't appreciate what actually goes on inside your brain and your body when you are sleeping, you know? There's a lot of people out there that believe that the less from a biological standpoint, the less necessary part of our sleep-wake cycle is the wake cycle. Like, what, you know, in terms of evolution, it's like, why are we awake?
Yeah, exactly, exactly, totally.
Which is something interesting to consider, but obviously not to practice on a 24-hour cycle. Yes. And bravo too. But, you know, it's amazing. And what I thought would be really, really great is to just have a think about, you know, what are the ramifications are of lacking sleep. And I know what you've discussed it and touched on it briefly. Depression is a relatively big deal. Sure. And, you know, to add to that, you have significantly higher chances of heart attacks and cardiac arrest, strokes, diabetes, weight gain. You know, the hormones associated with hunger, being leptin and ghrelin, are regulated in your sleeping cycle. So when you have disrupted sleep or you are in a state where you're having minimal sleep, either during, you know, the start of your sleep or towards the end, that is going to severely disrupt your ability to be hungry or satiated, should I say, and B, your ability to actually select food that nourishes you, yes, as opposed to going for those sugary, high fat kind of foods that are going to feel like you're in survival mode.
You know, and you mate, you mentioned evolution before, and I think, you know, you and I, whenever we catch up for coffee, you know, evolution, ironically enough, speaking about sleep, every time, you know, we talk about these things, you and I are both very fascinated into the reasons why. Why would that be the case? Why would our metabolism slow down, you know, the less sleep we have? Why would these hormones be secreted, you know, in response to a lack of sleep and so forth? And, you know, if you think about it, if you're not getting enough sleep from an evolutionary perspective, your body's saying, hey, why do we need to be on here? What the hell's going on? Did you hear a sound out there? Is there a pack of wolves? Is there a local tribe that's trying to take all our resources? Yeah. So you think about slowing the metabolism down, looking for more sugary foods with a higher glucose content. Your body is in a survival state because you've taken yourself out of a rest and digest state. So it makes perfect sense.
It completely and utterly does. And you're spot on. You know, it's like evolution's way of just trying to keep you alive for that short-term period. So, yep. You know, long story short, you know, sleep is a pretty important thing. And I attribute it to, you know, the tide that rises all other health boats.
Yes.
If somebody comes to me and is in a state of poor health, and they want to know about all the one percenters, they want to know about what kind of keto diet or, you know, what, you know, vegan or carnivore or this or that, whatever it might be, it's like, forget about all that stuff. If you're sleeping 4 hours a night, let's address that, because I'll tell you right now, not one single ounce of vegetable or is going to save you. You need to be able to address the simple things before you get into the minutiae. And I couldn't think of anything more foundational and simple than sleep.
Yeah, yeah. It's, you know, look, before we even get into the nitty-gritties, I mean, it's the low-hanging fruit, isn't it? You know, what you and I have seen from a high-performance perspective, both on the mental side and the physical side, is that, you know, let's go back to our years coaching together, right? Hey, what supplements do you take? What program do you follow for strength? When the program? What small lot? Are you doing that for your squatting program? What's your ab routine like? What's your mobility training like? You know, and a mentor said to me once, he said, you can have the best program in the world, but if you don't come into the gym, you're not going to get any results. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes it's the simple things. And then you build like a pyramid. Wow. Okay. So, you know, as a little tangent, you're going to the gym 5 times a week. Amazing. What's that like for you? Okay, cool. Now we can work in a bit of flexibility. Now we can have a look at your sleep. Now we can have a look at your diet. But I wouldn't be worrying about supplements and vegetables to increase melatonin levels and so forth until you've just got a good routine.
100%. And you hit the nail on the head. It's like the habits are the blanket and the arm that we need to use to be able to fire the gun or hammer the nail. You know, if you don't have that arm working well, then all this minutia is meaningless. You need to know how to actually apply these things. So back to sleep. I mean, like, you know, learning how to apply sleep seems very simple, right? You get, close your eyes and you're done. But let me tell you right now, in the world that we live in, it's actually a lot more complicated than it feels. And it wasn't, but it is now. Once upon a time, before, you know, a guy around 1900 or then to we rose with the sun and we pretty much started winding down when the sun went down. But now with the advent of, you know, man-made electricity, light bulbs, We are pretty much guided. We are engineering our own circadian rhythm, and this is a big deal. It's obviously a big deal for productivity in the modern world that we live in the industrial world that we live in. However, it's also a really big deal for our health habits and what we've done in this sense as well, because we can't control ourselves. We don't appreciate that. When the sun goes down, we need to start winding down.
Yes.
When the sun comes up, we need to appreciate that actually being in contact with the sun sets a stamp. It almost creates a dance with our human biology to say, right, it's time to start raising our elevated levels of cortisol. Yep. It starts to make us more productive. It starts to bring our focus up. And during that first phase of the day, not only does it make us more productive, but it sends a signal to our body then to when the sun comes down for us, like that tide rises, it needs to fall when the sun comes down.
I mean, you're absolutely right. You know, when you think about this concept, it sounds weird, doesn't it? But midnight means middle of the night. And yet for most of us, that's when we're kind of still on the screens and everything. So it's crazy. But I think... So let's get right into it then, mate. What would you say? So someone comes to you and says, my sleep's off as a result, you know, anxiety's very high. You know, let's just squash that myth for a second here that, you know, you're the only one. For most of us, Paulie and I included, if our sleeping is off, our anxiety is going to be high, of course. But someone who comes to you and says, you know, give me three things to really optimize my sleep, what would you hit them with?
So the first thing I would say is the use of light. I just touched on it earlier. To be able to be in direct contact with the actual naked light that the sun emits out. So if you are waking up, I don't know, let's call it between 6 and 7 a.m., the sun is most likely going to be out. If you can step outside for just 5 minutes, either go for a walk, but be in direct contact with that sun, even gaze towards the sun, I feel like I need to say this. If the sun is hurting your eyes, don't.
just a disclaimer here.
Just a simple disclaimer. I didn't think it was necessary to say. let's go ahead and say.
Health guru prescribes blindness.
Exactly right. Do not blind yourself.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So that's one thing. And like I said, as the sun begins to set. Gaze at the sunset as well, because what that does is that sends a signal to your body that your cortisol has risen in the morning, and that's when you want it to be at its highest, right? And then it starts to slowly kind of deplete or decelerate, so to speak, and come down. And then as the sun sets, what happens is your melatonin and your serotonin begin to rise. And these are these rest and relax kind of hormones, and they put you into a state where you can start to have a restful and restorative night's sleep for your body, for your hormones, for your brain. And the problem with modern technology is we're watching Netflix, we're at the same time as being, you know, doing work on our laptops at the same time as being iPhones, right? So at the same time as having overhead fluoro lights beaming. So the other thing I would suggest is, in terms of light, is reduce all of the lights if you can in your house. Be as close as you can to living in a cave.
Exactly.
You know, without, you know, really pissing off your partner. You know, I'm not going to tell you because I don't do it. I don't say don't stop watching TV, because it's a lovely thing to be able to do to wind down and watch some TV after a long day. So I do that, but that's one thing, and I can touch on other things. Do you have anything to add there, Tommy?
Yeah, well, I mean, I love, so one thing that we do just from personal experience is we wear blue light blockers every night, and we've changed the light bulbs from blue light to red light, which I mean, sometimes I find myself just, you know, not wearing, I mean, I actually read at night most nights, except funnily enough, we watched Meet the Parents last night on Netflix. That was fun. But so when I'm watching a screen, I'll wear my blue lights. And this might sound, you know, really extreme to someone who's just tuning on the first day. And by all means, this was exactly where I was when I first started listening to optimization and biohacking, which is kind of the colloquialism for it. It's actually more kind of biointegration, though, because you can't hack your own DNA. You can just work with it. So if it sounds a bit too extreme, as a simple thing, what I would do is just buy some blue light blockers. I just bought them at Officeworks. They were $18, and they're amazing what they do. But the other thing that I wanted to touch on as perhaps a second point is when you're trying to fall asleep, or let's say you're someone who can't fall asleep easily, not only is light a determining factor or associated with sleep quality and duration, but also context change. And we're very, very triggered, technically speaking, by, I mean, you think about TikTok as an example. You scroll and all of a sudden it's a completely new landscape, completely new person, you know, red letters and words for biological signaling, because we're very triggered by this, the color of red, for obvious reasons. All these things are going to keep you alert and awake, because your brain is saying, paying attention, is this going to kill me? Is this going to hurt me? So engaging in practices as well that bring you into that state of relaxation, a lovely conversation with your loved one, whatever it is. I think it's also worth mentioning that light, looking at light, to your point, is, am I right in saying that the cortisol spike actually occurs from blue light directly hitting your eyes, as opposed to just being in that space?
No, yeah, it's actually, so, which is spot on. That's why you shouldn't be wearing sunglasses when you're going for this walk, because, yeah, it's the optical nerve that actually, responds to this blue light. So,
yep.
And another thing I'll say is, to that point is you're going to have to get 50 times as much light if you're inside through a window as well. So because of the light being refracted through the actual windows themselves, so you do need to be bare out naked towards the actual sun itself. So yes, the absorption does come through the eye, and then it starts moving through the entire biology.
Well, so Before we move on, I really like that. So we've got three things for someone who's new to sleep but wants to optimize their sleep. We've got direct contact with the sun in the morning, which I think is also, I mean, a lovely little segue there. Is also movement in the morning, light movement in the morning. Again, you're kind of working to increase and spike that cortisol. So as you said, it starts to wind down into a nice routine, and then blue light blockers at night.
Yep.
What do you think?
Yeah, no, that's great. And just to the movement and the understanding of exercise, that starts to heat up your system as well. So as we wake up, we want to actually be heating up our system, because that's going to start to increase that cortisol, that adrenaline, that's going to start increasing our ability to be productive. Likewise, a couple of tools that you can use for that is having a cold shower. Nice. Now, a lot of people do think that if you're having a cold shower, you're cooling down your body. But if you're just having that cold shower for a short period of time, what's happening is the heat, or the blood, should I say, in your body is coming to the surface, to your skin, and the core of your body is actually heating up. Your body acts as like a thermostat, so to speak. So when the cold is there, your body is going to be heating up. So that's something to consider as well. But when we're going to sleep at night, conversely, a really, really nice thing to be able to do is have a hot shower, a warm bath, so your core can cool down.
Dude, we could do a whole podcast on regulation and homeostasis. I think that would be a really good one. It's spot on. Mate, I think we'd be remiss not to talk about coffee if we're talking about sleep.
Oh, and it's coffee.
It's so good. I had one this morning. I'm normally one a day, but if I'm getting a little excited, I'll have a second and I'll just pump some workout after that. I'm in a bit of a habit at the moment of training, kind of around 12:1. Mm-hmm. And they've got a cafe just at the gym, so I'll just get a little double espresso and I'm just wired and I'm ready to go. It's so good. It's so good. But yes, we should speak about coffee. What it does to the adenosine receptors. We don't have to get to the nitty gritty, but basically, when should people? How about we just squash a myth very quickly? Someone comes along to you and says, "You know what? I can have a coffee at like 9 or 10. I can fall asleep right away, so it doesn't affect me." What would you say in a loving way? Of course, we love you all very much.
Yeah,
fuck you. No, I'm joking.
One thing I will say is that there, from what I understand, there are some people that respond very differently to caffeine intake than others, right? There is the great majority of people is in the class that I put myself in. But I feel that no matter what, if you're an outlier and you feel like caffeine doesn't affect you as much as others, that's one thing. But absolutely everyone is going to be affected if you have a double espresso at 10 before after your dinner, just before you go to bed. So you mentioned the adenosine receptors in your body, that but just really, really briefly, that appears to be a chemical in your body that is released as soon as you wake up. And what that does is that inhibits your ability to stay awake. So what that does is that slowly begins to elevate as you wake up, and it gets to that height in the evening, right? So yep. What it does is that inhibits that that receptor. So what we want to be able to do is there's some school of thought out there that says if you wait for, say, 60 to 90 minutes after you wake up to allow your body to actually do its thing naturally, then have your first coffee, that's going to be a really, really great thing for your ability to then fall asleep at night. I get and I understand. And if you're able to do that, that's a wonderful thing.
Of course, yes.
But coffee tends to have, just back to what you were saying, coffee tends to have a half-life of, say, I think it's about 4 to 5 hours at a quarter life of about 8 to 10 to 12 hours, so it might be 5 to 6 hours. Now, if you're having a,
can you just quickly elaborate on what you mean by that, mate? Just for people who don't know half life. Yep.
So you have a single coffee, or let's say you have an espresso, right? And everything that it is doing. So if it's inhibiting these adenosine receptors, which is keeping you awake, right? If you have that at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, right? And the chemicals that it has produced in your body, it's going to take another 5 hours for that. 5 hours after you have that, half of the chemicals that are going on inside of your body are still taking place in your body.
Yep.
10 hours after, a quarter of those chemicals are still taking place. The half life versus a quarter life basically means the potency that the chemical have in your body.
Yep. So it's still 50% active with what it was doing when you took it.
Correct.
Which is insane because, you know, to your point, if you're having a double espresso at 10 p.m., 4 or 5 hours after that, still it's blocking those adenosine receptors from allowing you to really dive into a nice sleep.
Exactly. And that's where it's at. It's all about this nice restorative sleep. So to your fictitious person saying, I can have a coffee at 10 o'clock at night and not have to worry at all. Well, you may be getting to sleep, but the question that I have to ask you is what kind of quality of sleep are you having? Right. Are you getting the restorative sleep that you need? Do you wake up refreshed? Do you wake up feeling like and go again and feel like you could take on that day again?
Yes.
Because my thoughts are, and I feel like countless hundreds of studies would back me up on this, saying that, you know, you're going to be much you're going to be in a much more advantageous position not having coffee 10 hours before you go to sleep than having coffee. And I'm not against coffee. I told you, I freaking love the stuff.
It's good.
If I had room in my house, I'd have a shrine to the thing. In fact, I've got my own little machine and I have my ritual every morning when I wake up. And it's just a beautiful thing.
You got your IV drip in the corner.
Absolutely. But I don't have coffee after a certain amount of time in the day. Like, I pretty much cut myself off at 12 o'clock.
12, okay.
I might have two coffees in the day, but 12 o'clock, like, I'm going out for a meeting after this and it's a coffee meeting. It won't be until 1:30 that I sit down and have the coffee. I just know I'm ordering a decaf.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the amount of other benefits that you get from coffee are really worth drinking coffee. Like, yes, even with a decaf, you can still, and you know, like, decaf is not coffee, but you can still taste quite a bit like, it can still be really good is what I'm trying to say.
Yes.
And the benefits that you receive, like the antioxidant benefits that you get from coffee, still come through when it comes to decaf coffee as well.
And I think the dopamine increase as well. I think it kind of, coffee has an ability to increase dopamine from tonic baseline. Now, I've just read Dopamine Nation, so this is in my head, but it's about 1.5 from baseline. The major takeaway I took away from that book was that dopamine is this balance of pleasure pain. So both the pleasure center and the pain center actually co-occur in the same area of the brain.
Mm.
So what you have to make sure of is you recognize that when you're doing something that's, in layman's terms, exciting or rewarding or motivating, you're going to experience a proportional increase in pain when that starts to fall down, okay? And this is what the word craving means. So if you smoke methamphetamine and you have an insane time, you know, you're going to experience the exact same amount of pain, relatively speaking, when you come down from that. Okay. So it's important to really kind of take a bit of discipline or just foresight and just regulate that yourself.
Mm.
And it's hard. I mean, I've had to give up coffee, for weeks before, because I've just need to keep it in check, you know, my body needs to regulate itself. But that's obviously for another conversation. But coming back to sleep, just to bring everyone up to speed, so far we've got 3.5 tips really here. It's first things, absolutely, as you mentioned, Paul, it's getting light early in the morning, as soon as you wake up, you know, without being too puritanical about it. Movement as well, you know, so we're doing things to activate and increase cortisol levels to get your body primed for that circadian rhythm in the morning. Hey, this is what I do in the morning. So it speaks to a routine, I suppose. 3, it's blue light blockers, or it's just dampening the lights at night, you know, doing things that are less alerting, I suppose. And then when you're speaking about coffee, because we have to speak about coffee, coffee is wonderful. You know, Paulie and I both love it. I think before 12 is a really good call. That's something that I certainly try to work towards as well, just before 12.
Mm-hmm.
And to your point, mate, before I finish up here, for those who say it doesn't affect them, you know, we're not having a go against you, but what we are saying is, be open-minded. Find out what your sleep is like after 14 days of not doing it and see how you feel. It might be worse, might be better, but you'll gain greater perspective.
Well, I'll share a story with a friend who, you know, was one of those people that said, you know, I drink coffee through into the afternoon and it just doesn't seem to affect me. It doesn't seem to have a great impact on me. So I sent him some science, some literature about it. And I said, just check this out, see what you think and give it a go. Just try not. And he saw it, he read it, and he's like, great, I'm not going to have coffee. And he sent me a message the next day saying, I have not had such a restful sleep. My life. Okay, that was a one-off.
Yeah.
B was also could have been psychosomatic given the literature. But the reality is the literature's out there because the studies back it up.
Right. So,
it's a scientific reality. And also, don't smoke meth 10 hours before you
Exactly.
I'm not sure what the half-life is there.
No, the half-life of meth. That's right. That's right. We'll have to put the science in the show notes there. But you're right. I mean, you know, when someone is saying coffee doesn't affect me, what that might be speaking to is in fact that your body is so used to it that you actually need to have coffee just to bring those dopamine levels up to baseline, because that's what happens when we start. This is obviously called tolerance. You know, when we are so used to an exogenous chemical, we need it just to feel normal. You know, so try 30 days without it and see if it feels like meth.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's a really good kind of point to finish off on. I feel like that's a solid toolkit for you guys to take away. And should you feel like experimenting with one or some or even all of them, go for it, because it doesn't take much time to integrate into your life. And not only will you sleep better at night, but your mental health, you'll realize, will take a massive, massive boost. Your physical health will take a massive boost. Your vitality, your ability to, if your objective is to lose weight or athletic performance, will definitely be achieved at a greater rate. Because as I mentioned before, sleep is the tide that rises all other health boats.
Yeah, I love that, man. That's awesome. Beautiful. Paulie, you're a legend, mate. Love you very much. Looking forward to next week.
Thank you, Tommy. I consider these times very, very, very grateful for them, mate.
Beautiful. Thanks, guys. Peace.
Thanks, guys.